What's up, fellas? For the second summer now, I'm giving over the podcast mic to a few of our FRD brothers because I'm taking the month of July off to be with my family. This idea alone speaks to the power of FRD because the whole community was built on men showing up for each other in support of putting family first. So you're about to hear from one of our members interviewing another badass dad. These shows typically dive into one or more of the three areas where we focus our attention. First, you, the man, your mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. Number two, the family, your marriage, your kids, your family culture. And three, your business. We want you to build a business that gives you time and financial freedom. If you're a man who always wants to level up, learn more, become the best version of yourself, you have found the right podcast. Because if you're like me, I'm always finding ways to optimize, to buy back my time, and have a bigger impact with less effort, both in my business and within my family. I want to get it all done and still have energy left over. I want to connect with my wife and kids. I want to win at business without losing my family to the process. And I want to manage my emotions along the way. So if you're like me, Front Row Dads may be for you. Front Row Dads are men who show up, step up, and speak up. We're family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. I'm glad you're here today. Fellas, enjoy this interview. And if you want to learn more about our community, visit frontrowdads.com. Guys, before we get into the conversation today, I want to tell you some exciting things happening inside the Brotherhood. First, I want to begin by giving props to my really good friend, Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning. Every year around Father's Day, we co-host a call where we open up about what's going on inside our lives, the highs and the lows. And Hal sends this out to his group of The Miracle Morning for dads who want to be better men. And when Hal believes in something, he wants to tell everybody about it. So that's exactly what we do. It was an amazing call. And several new people are now part of Front Row Dads because Hal decided to tell everybody about the group that's been changing his life since 2016. So I want to thank Hal and thank everybody for spreading the word about Front Row Dads. And guys, if you're interested in learning about our community, monthly now we are hosting live calls where you can jump in. We'll explain to you what happens here with inside the Front Row Dad Brotherhood and how it might benefit you and your family to join. So just go to frontrowdads.com and you can get more information on our next available info session. I also want to give some love to my buddy, Ali Jafarian, who, by the way, just led 16 men into the mountains of Colorado for our second annual Summer Summit Adventure. I won't even begin to try to tell you about it, but if you get a chance, go to our Instagram. Our handle is just Front Row Dads. And look at some of the photos of these men creating this adventure together, growing together. It was awesome. There's too much to say about it right now, but thank you to Ali and thank you to all the men inside the Front Row Dad community that are stepping up, leading events like this and creating these shared experiences so we can become the type of men that can lead our families more effectively. Guys, also speaking of events, our next online event is coming up. It's the Intentional Parenting Summit. It's going to be July 18th. Mark your calendars, July 18th. We've got special guest, Dr. William Stixrud. He is a clinical neuropsychologist and founder of the Stixrud Group. He is a faculty member at Children's National Medical Center and George Washington University School of Medicine. He co-authored the best-selling book, The Self-Driven Child, and the critically acclaimed What Do You Say? Talking to Kids to Build Motivation, Stress Tolerance, and a Happy Home. His work has been featured in major media outlets like NPR, CNN, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, et cetera, et cetera. We've got him live with us July 18th. If you want more information on how you can join the Front Row Dads online summit, just go to frontrowdads.com/summit and you can get all the information there. And lastly, our big event coming up in December 2024, well, we call it FRDL, that's Front Row Dads Live. Tickets are on sale now. frontrowdads.com/live. 92 of the 125 available tickets have already been sold. That is right. 92 of the 125 tickets have already been sold. It is June as I record this. And I just confirmed yesterday that Dr. Robert Glover, author of the book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, incredible teacher, men's group leader, will be with us live in person. It's actually his birthday, and he's choosing to spend it with us at Front Row Dads Live. There's going to be more special guests announced in the months ahead. I'm very excited to spend some time with you. So go check it out, frontrowdads.com/live. And I hope to see you in person in Austin in December. And now on to the show.
Good morning, everybody. It is my honor today to step in here on the Front Row Dad podcast. And I've got a good friend of mine, Jason Wachobon, on with me. He is first and foremost a father, a husband, an athlete, and he happens to be a serial entrepreneur as well. So he's the co-CEO of Mind Body Green a well-respected author and someone that is highly regarded in the health and wellness space. So, Jason, it's an honor to have you on today.
The honor is all mine. It's incredible to be able to call you a friend. It's great to collaborate with you. We love everything you're doing with Malk. So yeah, the honor is all mine. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. So what I love about the Front Row Dad podcast, when we do these member guest hosts, is I get to talk to my friends and I get to talk about things that they're passionate about. And before we get into some of the current things that are going on, Jason, let's understand a little bit about, and give the audience a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, what drove you through the early days, and maybe even some stories with your dad. So where did the story begin for you, sir?
Wow, this is a big one. This could take 40 minutes. So I'm turning 50 in November. I grew up on Long Island. My parents got divorced when I was very young, 2 years old. I really don't have memories of my parents together under the same roof because they basically don't exist. So predominantly raised by my mother and my grandmother, two women in the 1970s. And I grew up in a town, Manhasset, which was made famous by the Pulitzer Prize winning book, The Tender Bar. Fantastic read, turned it into a series. The town, to summarize, was about lacrosse, alcohol, and the Catholic Church.
Sounds like a trifecta.
Yes. That's where I grew up. I loved playing sports. I'm very tall. I'm 6'7". Played everything. Basketball became the sport I primarily focused on. And segueing to my dad, it was kind of basketball was my relationship with my father. You know, he wasn't around that much. Saw him once a week. Predominantly, we would play basketball or as a kid, go to McDonald's together. That was kind of it. I learned about being, I think, a dad, mostly from my mom. My mom had to kind of do it all. My father ended up passing away unexpectedly from heart disease when I was 19 years old. He was 47. When he passed away, our relationship had probably been the best. He was more present than he ever was around that time, not just showing up to basketball games, but just around more physically, often to do with basketball. And the irony in my mind is, this was the time of his life when he was broke. He was drowning in debt. He had just gotten divorced for the second time. And that was really painful financially. And when he was wealthy, he really wasn't around. One of my favorite memories from my father, when I was 19, I was in boarding school for a year playing basketball to get my grades up. He had to run multiple credit cards to pay a bill at a diner. And he didn't seem embarrassed about it. He just rolled with it. I thought it was funny. And in reflecting upon my relationship with my dad, you know, for this show and just approaching midlife and having two little kids, and for someone who's ambitious, for me, the takeaway from this and my father, your kids don't care what car you drive to practice or what hotel you stay in on family vacation. They just care that you're present. And for me, that's a really good reminder. The other reminders from my father, you know, life is precious. You know, it was here one day, gone the other. Sudden catastrophic heart attack. A couple of weeks before he had passed away, we had gotten into a fight. I was supposed to watch him play paddle tennis, essentially padel or pickleball. You know, they're all kind of similar in my mind.
Yes, they are.
And I went out party with my friends and I slept in and I didn't make it. And he was pissed and rightfully so. And we kind of had it out. And a couple of days before he died, we had made up, essentially, and made amends. And when he passed away, the shock, the sadness, but what also immediately came to mind was, I'm so glad we made amends. Because how terrible would I have felt if my last words to my dad were essentially like, F you.
Yeah. Wow.
And the lesson there, I never leave a conversation with anyone I love. No matter how difficult or angry we get with, I love you. And so a lot to unpack there. Was a big question. I just want to give you a perspective of, and I've reflected a lot upon, you know, being a dad and trying to be a good dad, trying to be present. One, I think I learned a lot from my mother. And I do think there are a lot of moms and then dads too, who
Jason,
are
before
playing
we
both
get
roles.
I would love to get into this impact from your mom. I want to go back because one, I'm already in bonus time. And that's a saying that we use in the community where you hear something and the time that you've invested, you've got enough value out of it. And your comment there about making sure you don't end a conversation angry. I mean, that is just such a great reminder because the people that listen to this podcast, both men and women, are so driven professionally that sometimes we might end those conversations in a way that is not the way we should. So that's a great reminder. Another thing that came up that really resonated, you're talking about the diner experience and your dad being present when he was broke. Kids spell love T-I-M-E. It's about the time you spend with them. So you're hitting on some of the core themes within Front Row Dads, not even intentionally, but you're just sharing your story. And it's just so powerful as a reminder that no matter what the cards are we're dealt in life, it's how we choose to experience it. And I'd love to transition into understanding how your mom and your grandmother had such an impact on you. So I'll pass it back to you, Jason, but those were some just absolute gold nuggets.
Thank you. Getting ready for this show is I had to really kind of dig deep and say, you know, it's something I've been going through. Like, what were the learnings? You know, who am I today? Who do I want to be? Who do I not want to be? So in terms of my mother and grandmother, my mother, you know, kind of played every role. I was an athlete. I wanted to play baseball. She played baseball with me. Went to every game, drove me everywhere. When I was in high school, I was already doing quote unquote club sports in the early days, which the driving was insane. She took me anywhere. She took me to Harlem in the 1990s. And Harlem was not the Harlem it is today. It was a very so imagine you know, single white woman with a pretty white, gawky, tall kid just showing up in Harlem with some tremendous life lessons. But she was always there, incredibly supportive, was the disciplinarian, but was my cheerleader. And in my view, really was able to strike that balance. That's something I try to strike and find difficult often. Gave me confidence, made me believe that I could accomplish anything I set my mind to, established faith as something core to who I am. You know, I was in Sunday school. My mother even taught Sunday school by Christian faith. What my grandmother passed to my mother and then my mother to me before I went off to school, The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. I still have the paper book. It looks like it's going to fall apart, but she did everything.
That's amazing. And that's what a blessing in life when we have people that show up for us like that. And what a great reminder that we can show up that way for people too. That's amazing. So boarding school, get grades up, you're playing basketball. You end up meeting your life partner at some point in that world. Can we start to transition on how you met your bride and then your progeny thereof?
So I met my wife, partner, co-founder, co-CEO, mother of our two beautiful children, Colleen, on a blind date in San Francisco in the end of 2007. At the time, it was in your world. I was in the CPG world running an organic chocolate chip cookie company called Crummy Brothers. We were in every Whole Foods in the country, and I have lots of stories to tell about that. But it was an incredible experience, ended up not working, and I met Colleen on a blind date. It was kind of pre-Facebook, pre-everything. And just connected immediately. And I was I was 33 at the time. And at that time of my life, I had been around and had serious relationships and just knew kind of this was it. And shortly after, about a year later, we got engaged and then got married, and the rest is history.
I didn't realize how close our paths paralleled. I met Melissa on a blind date through Match.com. We dated for a year, then we're engaged for a year, then married. So I love that the similarities continue to carry through. So you met Colleen on a blind date, married shortly thereafter, and now you are the proud father of two amazing daughters, if I recall correctly.
Yes, two daughters, 7 and 5.
Man, those are fun ages, and they are handful ages for sure.
They are handful, and it is a journey. And I think about, you know, the difficulties of being an entrepreneur and running a growing business. And by far and away, the most difficult position I'll ever have is one of father. I'm constantly questioning myself. Just last night, am I too hard on her? Or, you know, the other day, or am I too soft? I am constantly Monday morning quarterbacking. I am constantly trying to see 3 years, 5 years ahead, navigate their lives as best I can, at the same time not micromanaging, but also not being too hands-off. And it is a delicate balance, and it is constantly humbling.
It is for sure humbling. And the world that we're in now, where there's so much access to everything, trying to keep them safe in that same environment. We're actually transitioning into one of our pillars starting in July of intentional parenting, where we spend 2 months going deep talking about how can we be more intentional. I tee that up because a few months ago we had a chance to have dinner and you shared with me a little road trip that y'all decided to take because your daughters play volleyball and there was some interest to see what was going on. So share with the team a little bit about what y'all pursued a few months ago.
Yeah. So a few months ago, our daughters took a strong interest in volleyball and I've kind of fallen in love with the sport. I think it's an incredible sport. And we live in Miami and the national championship was in Tampa, which is, you know, not that far away. Tickets were somewhat reasonable. So I said, all right, let's buy tickets. Let's go. And it was an incredible experience for our girls, 20,000 people in an arena to see collegiate women play, something that wouldn't have happened years ago. For our oldest daughter, who's off the charts tall, she just lit up. It was like a tall girl convention. And it was this moment where you could see it. I felt like there was a connection where, okay, these are my people. I can do this. And it was just incredible to see the athleticism, their performance, and see our kids. I got choked up. Nebraska brought about 15,000 people. You know, UT only brought like 4,000 or 5,000.
Nebraska travels well. Nebraska traveled, but it was just one of the best fan bases.
They were waiting outside the stadium for the girls to get off the bus 2 hours early to cheer them. I started to choke up. Like, this is just unbelievable. And I think there are a couple of things that I'd want to touch on here. One, I believe in sports as being transformational for a variety of reasons. For myself personally, learned work ethic, learned how to deal with adversity. It allowed me to connect with people demographically. Growing up in Manhasset, upper middle class town where I was one of the few kids whose parents were divorced, I lived on the wrong side of the tracks in a very safe, modest home compared to other very big homes. I thought, you know, there was a moment in time where I kind of like, oh, you know, poor me. Right away, I started playing basketball with kids in New York City who have no money, don't know who their father is. And it was right away, wow, I'm blessed. That was a lesson. So one, connecting with people across multiple demographics. And I think this idea that sports can take you places and help with your mental health and resilience. And I think as I fast forward, and it goes on and on, but I fast forward today, being a girl dad, so to speak, it is a challenging time. There was a scary statistic from the CDC recently that nearly three in five teen girls said they felt persistently sad or hopeless. 30% seriously considered dying by suicide. That's almost a 60% rise in the past decade. Horrifying. We must do better. We need to do better. And it's complicated. This isn't an easy solve here. You know, I think we'd all agree that devices and social media are playing a role. But I think about sports, girl sports, and there's an opportunity here. There was to shine a light here on the good. According to the Women's Sports Foundation, girls who play sports are 1.5 to 2.5 times in terms of experiencing a mental health disorder, 1.5 to 2.5 times lower for girls who play sports. And girls who play sports, 1.5 times higher levels of meaning and purpose compared to girls who never played. So something that lights me up beyond the work I do at Mind Body Green is the transformational power of athletics for girls in terms of protecting themselves against the pitfalls of mental health in society. You look at the data, this is something that's really powerful. Whether your kid goes on to play at the college level, professional level, or is just a role player on the team who maybe doesn't even play, but shows up to practice. Like, there's no question in my mind that we need to get girls playing sports. It's big for me. I believe in the power of osmosis. Every family has values. Our family values sports. And whether they turn out to be great or not, we're going to play as long as we can because I believe in what it can do, not only for boys and girls, but girls specifically with all the challenges they face.
Those stats are terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely terrifying. And I think that we're at a bit of a golden moment here, call it the Caitlin Clark effect or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Where there is a resurgence of support for female sports. And I think as dads, we have the opportunity to latch onto it, especially 100%. If you have the means and you have a resource around you, go watch women's games. There's nothing more fun than to watch a women's volleyball game or a women's basketball game. There are universities across the country. Every person that listens to this podcast could go to one of those within an hour.
100%. The tickets are more reasonable than you think, maybe with the exception of Caitlin Clark. As I joke, we drive a minivan, but we will splurge on getting to these sporting events. We took our girls to watch the U.S. Women's National Soccer team in Atlanta. Short flight, reasonable. You can get great seats, and it wasn't that bad. Okay, let's go. We took them there. And that's, you know, to see women. We live in Miami, so there's so much talk about Messi. And I was like, girls, Messi's the GOAT, but we got to talk about some of the girls. Let's go watch the girls. And so then for girls to see women on that stage with 50,000 people watching them, tremendous. We're going to go to LA in a couple of months. We're going to go see the Sparks.
That's awesome.
You know, we don't need to see LeBron. We could see the Sparks have a solid team. And so I just think for girls to see women on that stage, positive role models that they are, is just incredibly powerful.
And you mentioned your daughter, your 7-year-old is off the chart. My 11-and-a-half-year-old is off the chart. I mean, she passed her mom in height at age 10.
Wow.
So it's a beautiful thing. She'll be as tall, if not taller than me. And that spark that you mentioned when you said, I feel like I'm with my people at the volleyball tournament. When I took her to her first women's basketball game, she's like, oh, there's tall women like me.
Yeah.
And it really is an unlock. It's our job. And it's that balance you were talking about earlier, is how much do I support and how much do I just kind of guide? And I believe that a lot of our responsibility as dads is to guide them and not tell them what to do, but give them some pretty wide boundaries and guardrails and say, this is a path you should consider. But to see them light up in that way is so, it just fills a dad's heart.
It really is. And look, I think about this balance all the time. How do I kind of push or nudge? How do I know when to back off? And that's something I'm actively working on and try to strike that balance. How do you expose them to everything, push them to everything, teach them the lessons you want them to have, but at the same time, also be their dad.
Yeah. And be present and know that they can come to you for anything, which is a heck of a balance to strike. Anything else on your kids? Because I would love to get into some on, because I'm a big fan of the products that you make. I'm a big fan of the book that you wrote, The Joy of Well-Being. It's one that I think that people that listen to this podcast would really soak up and enjoy. But anything else on your wife and your girls?
I'll just add, I think we try to live our values. We're in the health and wellness industry, as you. We're trying to educate our kids on labels. They're kids, you know, they want dessert, they want donuts. But at the same time, I'm trying to teach them, okay, girls, here's our rule. We can have the ice cream, we can have the dessert, but we need some protein. Like, how do we get some protein on the plate? Let's look at the label. Sugars, you'll love this. So Pirate's Booty is a big thing. My older daughter wouldn't get why I'm like, I'm not into it. And I said, let's read the label. It's canola oil. And so that stuck in her head. And so I was so proud. She said to me the other day, it came up in conversation, and she was like, well, it has canola oil. It's not good. And I'm like,
yes, that is a win right there.
I'm like, just don't say that to your teacher. Don't say that to anyone else at school. Like, always keep your thoughts around nutrition to yourself. It's about our family. Every family has different rules, but I'm glad that you know.
My daughter loves seaweed. And as she started reading labels, she will only eat the ones that use avocado oil.
Love it. We're not that far. We tried seaweed. You're ahead.
You know, it's one of those things. It's continuing. What does it take? Exposure 7 times to a food before they'll start to really enjoy it. So my son, he turns 8 here in just under a month. He still is my fighter, man. He's like, give me the chicken nuggets. Give me the steak, which he loves steak. So good protein.
That's great. Fantastic.
But his breakfast for the last year, almost every day, was 2 scrambled eggs and a flour tortilla. And that's it. Like, that was his go-to.
That's great.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because he's so consistent. Oh, it's got to have salt too. He is a big fan of salt.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. The food dynamic with our kids is definitely, it's an interesting
process.
One right now.
You want them to learn some good habits, but at the same time, you don't want to be the parent who pushes too hard where they revolt and completely go the other way and empower them. Because the reality is once they hit a certain age, it's game over.
Yeah. Well, I'm approaching that with my daughter. I'm approaching that with my daughter at 11 and a half. You mentioned protein, and I would love to dive in because I have thoroughly been enjoying some Mind Body Green protein, but there's something special about the way that y'all built the protein with the amino acid stack. Would love for you to share that with the community, because that was a very enlightening one for me and changed the way I look at my protein consumption.
Yeah, a lot to talk about on this one. And it's been a transformation for me personally. When you eat protein, it is critical for building and maintaining lean muscle mass, which many believe, including myself, is essential for longevity. However, all protein is not created equal. And it's about the amino acid profile, specifically leucine. And you need a certain amount of leucine, and that amount is north of 2.5 grams of leucine, to trigger what's called muscle protein synthesis, which is kind of what it sounds like. It converts the protein you're consuming to muscle if you're doing resistance training, because you can't just like protein your way to muscle. You need to actually do the work. I will always add that. And so it's critical hitting that threshold for adults. For kids, doesn't matter. So what that means, if you eat like 50 grams of what I would say protein that doesn't have enough of that leucine, say 2 and not 2.5, that protein isn't going to help you build muscle. It just kind of goes to waste. And I don't know about you, but like, I just don't want to just eat protein for the sake of protein. I like protein. I love some great pork ribs or a burger, grass-fed, pasture-raised. I love all that, but I want it to count towards the muscle. And this was an unlock for me because it really forced me to get educated on the highest quality sources of leucine. And theoretically, this is also game changing because something that has, so our protein, our grass-fed whey protein isolate, which I take multiple times a day, and I'm glad you're enjoying, that has 25 grams of protein, but 2.9 grams of leucine. So it's not about the protein number per se, it's about the leucine. So the protein counts. 25 and 2.9 is better than 40 and 2. The 25 will count versus that 40 with the 2 won't count. And this was enlightening for me in terms of how I structured my day when I eat and really focused on protein consumption. And I feel better. I'm more satiated. I think if we were to zoom out, the way we've been thinking about weight loss or weight management, we've conflated with health. I think in reality, it's not about the number on the scale. It's about lowering body fat. And I think we've done a disservice to men and women here. I think the message for a long time was more cardio, eat less, fast, have grain juice, essentially starve yourself. Mm-hmm. And one, that's not fun. Who wants to do that? I think a better conversation, a more effective conversation is you don't need to lose weight. We need to change your body comp. So let's turn that fat into muscle. Let's go to the gym. Let's eat more protein. And you're going to have better results. And the bigger thing here, too, is you're going to be more metabolically flexible because that muscle is protective. You are better off having more fat if you have a hell of a lot more muscle than being like skinny and having less fat, if that makes sense. And so I like a good donut every once in a while. If you're super skinny and you carry some fat, that donut's going to wreak havoc on you metabolically, whereas you could have more body fat, but have a hell of a lot more muscle, and that donut's not going to impact you.
That's, well, first of all, my son would love to hear that donuts every once in a while are okay for you. If you eat the rest of the right way for the rest of the time.
Protein and muscle.
It is.
It's more of a balanced lifestyle, if you ask me.
That's a beautiful thing. And here's the irony, Jason, is we're recording this on a Friday. We were supposed to record this on a Tuesday. And I woke up and I had food poisoning. And I know what happened. I went out Friday night and I typically eat very good. I got something I wouldn't normally get. I'm like, I'm going to get some fried pickles and I'm going to get a sandwich. I'm going to do this that I would have done 10 years ago because the wife and kids are away. And guess what? My body revolted. It's like, nope, this is not the way you've been nourishing me. This is not the way I function anymore. So when we actually shift the way we eat, we shift the way that we nourish our body, it's in the right way. It's like, yeah, let's go. I'll convert that protein into muscle. But 100%. If you go back the other way, I'm going to punish you.
Yeah, it was rough. And I will add for context, my body lives for malt oat milk and our whey protein powder. It cannot get enough of it. And my lab results prove that it's working.
So you are big into, obviously, MindBodyGreen, the entire enterprise is on health and wellness. Over the last couple of years and through reading your book and having conversations, you've done a lot of panels to understand how your body reacts. There was one that you shared with me that was very impactful to understand how you break down, I believe it was fats.
Yes.
So can you share with the crew here a little bit more about what that test was and how enlightening that was for your journey?
Yeah. So there are a number of tests, and I'll just briefly touch on all of them. Like, for those interested, there are various price levels. So, you know, one is, if you're interested in your genetics, there's a test called 3x4. It's like $300. It's a much better version of 23andMe, where you will actually get information that's visualized in a way that's easy to understand, like how you respond to certain foods. What does your DNA look like? What are your SNPs, mm-hmm. so to speak? What are you at risk for? And it's like you can get 80% there, just like kind of reading it carefully, and get 100% there with a doctor. So that's one that's like $300. The second one is the one you mentioned. It's the Boston Heart Cholesterol Test. And essentially what this does is it's able to provide insights on how your body absorbs cholesterol. So for some people, they can have tons of cholesterol, just goes right through them, no big deal. And there are other people like me who are overabsorbers, which means they really take it in. And for me specifically, the C16 fatty acid, which can be found in coconut oil and apparently coconut milk. I always knew coconut oil could go either way, but not coconut milk, is terrible for me. And so this was enlightening because I was having a lot of coconut milk at the time, and all of my cardiovascular metrics went through the roof in a bad way. I removed the coconut milk. I went all in on malt goat milk. My ApoB, which I encourage every man who's concerned about cardiovascular disease, and I'll touch on that a bit later, what else they should look for, went from 110, which was in the red, to 71 in the green. Beautiful. In 8 weeks, just from that switch. And for me, do I really love coconut milk? No. Do I love oat milk? Yes. Do I love your oat milk? Yes, yes. This is amazing. And what it also said to me is, you know what? I probably don't have to cut out meat at all. I was limiting my consumption of meat to some degree. Am I going to eat red meat every day? No. But you know what? I can have lean cuts more often than I think. So if I'm going to get a, you know, some grass-fed ground beef, I'm going for that 93% lean and I'm good.
Yeah.
That's better than coconut milk for me. So very enlightening. So cardiovascular disease, that test is a must. Test for ApoB, test for LP little a. Your doctor resists, get a new doctor. These are inexpensive tests. For someone who wants to go a little bit deeper on cardiovascular disease, there's a new test called Clearly, C-L-E-E-R-L-Y. It's about $1,000, but it is the gold standard in heart disease. 3D MRI, not just the heart, but all the arteries around the heart. Personally, I know people, this has saved people's lives, catch blockages like years ahead. For $1,000, it's like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, super easy, amazing. If you really want to go deep, full body MRI scans are getting a lot of attention. There's Pronuvo, there's Ezra. They're about $2,000. I did the Pronuvo. It picks up things, again, could be life-saving. I think where we've advanced in terms of science, if you catch cancer early, you're good. Pancreatic cancer, the problem there, that one, typically catch it late and it's too late to do much in terms of treatment. You catch it early, you're okay. Maria Menounos, the celebrity TV anchor, feeling somewhat healthy but a little off, they caught pancreatic for her very early on one of these scans. So and can catch minor things. For me, it caught a couple minor things. I had no idea that were having an impact. So for one, it caught, I have a severely deviated septum. I never knew. This has been affecting my sleep. To solve, a little nasal strip, buy at CVS. That one's a little bit more expensive, $2,000 to $3,000 range. But if you're concerned about cancer or just like want to go all in, it's an hour. I am claustrophobic. You catch me in an elevator that's crowded, I'm not a happy camper. I sat in a full body MRI, no problem, because they have Netflix. I was watching Drive to Survive, and the way they do it with like the depth levels, no claustrophobia. I was like, this is amazing. So those are kind of like the high level, some of the tests I would consider for anyone listening who is with the price ranges, like really wants to understand how they're doing.
And those are incredible tips. You know, you mentioned it briefly earlier and you talked about your values and how your girls communicate always. And you said, don't talk about that at school. So as you think about your family and what you stand for, so obviously sports are a big part of it. Y'all run Mind Body Green, which is a holistic health and wellness enterprise. How do you integrate that into raising of your daughters and to give them a leg up as they move forward? And what does it look like? Do you have interactions with their friends yet, and how that plays through with those conversations?
They're still so young. The friend interactions are usually, you know, supervised with other parents. We encourage them to not use the word best friend ever. We say your best friend is your sister. That's it. No best friends here. They come and go. We have lots of friends. And we encourage them that, you know, friends are going to come and go. And your friend may be your friend now, and you'll have another friend, and maybe you'll come back to that friend. We want them to be open in that process. We try to reward effort, not the result. Encourage them to work hard. Encourage them to be kind. Our motto's kind of work hard, have fun, be kind, and be calm. The be calm one is very much a work in progress as we get ready for bedtime and getting off to school on some days.
Is that for you or is that for the girls?
I think it's for them. And then, you know, it trickles up, so to speak.
That is definitely one that we've got a couple dads that are very proud that they are no longer in they are now in a scream-free home. It's something that they've been working aggressively on to remove screaming. There's actually a book that Ray Bayet has given to a lot of people, the scream-free household. I know Matt Drinkhan is very proud to have a scream-free household. So it's that dynamic. When you said that the calmness, I'm like, well, that's probably for me in my house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a work in progress. We're working on it.
Yeah. It's always a work in process. So long as you're making that positive momentum forward, I think that's really the ultimate goal as parents. Yeah.
And the other thing we try, because I think often as a parent, you know, there'll be times where I do raise my voice. And then, of course, right after I feel terrible. And so quickly try to course correct and say, hey, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I'm really sorry. But also, here's why I'm upset. And so it's this blend of like, I am sorry, I shouldn't have done that, but you're just not getting a pass on this.
And what you're demonstrating at that time is that you as a parent and your bride, y'all have real emotions. And when you can actually articulate that to the kids, then they understand like, oh, I'm allowed to have these emotions too. It's how I talk about them that changes. My son was a habitual, just clench the fist, stomp off, rage, shut the door. He got that from me. So I've had to be very intentional. Like when I have an emotion, like I will sit at the bottom of the stairs. I'm 6'2". I'm not quite as tall as you, but I'm still significantly taller than my son. So I'll sit down at eye level and I'll go, okay, I got upset. This is what happened. This is why it caused me to get upset. Do you understand this? Or instead of saying, do you understand? It's like, tell me what you understand. So he can play back. He's like, honestly, Dad, I wasn't listening. Could you say that again? And it's taken us years to get into this cadence and this conversation to be able to articulate, hey, we can have emotions. Guys can actually have emotions.
Right.
And it's okay. We don't have to compress, suppress, and repress every emotion that we have. So we can actually be real in this world, be authentic to who we are, have emotions, talk about them, and still be a parent and educate why we think that their choice could have gone a different way.
Well said. I'll take a page from you there. It's always tough when you're in the heat of the moment, or you're in a rush to get somewhere, but that's sage advice.
So I'm going to give you a couple minutes here. We've hit around some of the things that MindBodyGreen does. You have so many resources, so many articles, so much insight, as well as phenomenally clean products, especially your clean coffee, which is off the charts, by the way. Mold-free coffee goes great with the new malt creamer.
Drinking it right now.
Love it. Would love for you to share with the Front Row Dad community just a little bit about MindBodyGreen and what lights you and your bride up. You know, it's not often that a husband, wife are co-founders, co-CEOs. So if you could share a little bit about y'all's mission and journey, just so those that are curious can explore further.
So it has been a journey. MindBodyGreen's been around for now 15 years. I am the founder. The origin story, when I was running that cookie company we were talking about, we weren't doing well. I was stressed. I flew over 100,000 miles domestic in the year. Me in a coach seat, not good for my lower back or anyone around me. Wasn't really eating well. My diet was basically steak and martinis. Consumed so much. My picture is on the wall of the Palm Steakhouse in Midtown Manhattan next to Adam Sandler and Joe Namath at age 20. It's kind of insane. People go in there and be like, who's this asshole next to Joe Namath and Adam Sandler? Me at age 27. That's how much I consume for people who go to the Palm Steakhouse. I'm still in there, Midtown West. And so still eat meat, but not as much, you know, opt for the grass fed. And old basketball injury combined with stress, sleep, poor nutrition. I had two extruded discs in my lower back, L4, L5, S1, excruciating sciatica in my right leg. I couldn't walk. My right leg felt like a lightning rod. Walking brings me joy. If I don't get my 10,000 steps a day, I am a grumpy dinosaur. Went to a specialist. He said, you need back surgery. I have nothing against surgery. Just generally see it as a last resort. And the success stats on back surgery aren't that good anyway. Sought a second opinion. That doctor said the same thing. It was almost an afterthought. He said, you know, maybe some yoga or therapy could help. And I said, okay, you know, I'll give yoga a shot. Colleen and I were dating at the time. She had a yoga practice. And so I started with some really light yoga, 5 to 10 minutes, morning, evening, started to feel better. The pain started to subside, start to go north, which is like a positive sign with sciatica. If it starts to go back up, and made a lot of changes, started to reassess diet, incorporate more vegetables, less inflammation, started to look at everything in my life. And I completely healed. I went from couldn't walk to being pretty much fine in 6 months. And I had this moment where I said, wow, everyone's got health and well-being. If we're fast forwarding almost 15 years, the world back then, the wellness was equated with the spa. Anything holistic was just like batshit crazy, preached the choir of, you know, the west side of LA. That's where you are right now. You know, Brooklyn, Boulder. It was extreme science-based holistic well-being really wasn't a thing. And in my mind, there was a huge opportunity to bring this to the masses. Let's not preach the choir. Let's build a bigger church. And that true well-being was this blend of mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and in mental way, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and environmental well-being, all connected, one word, Mind Body Green. And so that's kind of how it all started. And we believe content is information. It's empowerment. I can provide the best products ever, but if you don't know how they're good or how to use them or what other lifestyle modifications you should make, it's kind of worthless. So started with content, then dove into online education, some deeper trainings. We have a health coaching program, functional nutrition program, events, bringing people together, I always think is really powerful. We did a fantastic event with you in LA. Really powerful. You get a room of like-minded people together. I think magic can happen. And then products. And if I segue to products and supplements, it came from a place where young children, 40s, heart disease runs in my family. Men don't traditionally have a good history. Father died of heart disease in his 40s. Grandfather died of heart disease in his 40s. And the other grandfather, cancer in his 40s. So here I am in my 40s and I've got young kids. And I say, you know what? I've got access to everyone. I need to go deeper than blood pressure here. And so we found out that I had a marker homocysteine, which is a measure of inflammation. If you have, this is where the genetics come in and blood work comes in. If you have the MTHFR gene, which like half the population does, it's likely your homocysteine is out of whack. And homocysteine is essentially inflammation of the blood. Without getting into like the whole methylation process, if your levels of homocysteine are high, it could lead to clotting. So that's aneurysm. That's pulmonary embolism. That's stroke. My wife, Colleen, actually had a pulmonary embolism after a long flight years ago. So I was familiar with this. And so your homocysteine is supposed to be under 15. Mine was 63. To this date, every medical professional I meet, I'm like, what's the highest you've ever seen? I think I still take the cake. And my doctor, Frank Lipman, who I still see, thought the result was a mistake. He said, take the test again. It wasn't a mistake. And I didn't go to Dr. Google immediately, which I usually do. I was like, what do I do? Is there surgery? Is pharmaceutical? What? Mm-hmm. He was like, you need to supplement with a cocktail, essentially of B vitamins and betaine and some other things. And so through supplementation, I went from 63 and today I'm between 10 and 12.
That's amazing.
And it is. And I could argue it saved my life. And there's not much with diet you can do, if anything, with regards to homocysteine. And so I was someone who believed in supplements, but I really became a believer and went really deep. And that kind of became the inspiration for our product line. How could we build best-in-class products rooted in science, whether it's methylation or protein consumption or creatine? Like if you're building lean muscle mass or cognition, we've got a whole host. Or you love coffee, but you just want like a better coffee that you could feel great about. And so that was the inspiration for the product line.
You've taught a masterclass alone here and just a couple of your personal stories on how when we choose to take our health and nutrition into our own hands, that we can fix anything. And it's making sure we've got the right resources, obviously. I mean, Dr. Google can only take you so far. WebMD can take you so far. But with the right resources and the right education and the right tests, to your point earlier, we can actually go identify and have the right conversations. I love what you said earlier. If your doctor doesn't give you the test, fire them. And that's something that in today's, I'm a child of the 80s. It's like, go to the doctor. The doctor's word is gold. No. The healthcare system has shifted so much that it's, they want to get you in, get you out, get your billing in and move on to the next. When you 100%. Find that doctor that will have the conversation, that will look at the extra tests, that will understand what your concerns are. We're doing that with my daughter. We have a separate doctor for her as a pediatrician because we can have the whole body conversation. And what a difference it's made. So I honor you for the way that you built an enterprise around this on asking the questions.
To build off what you just said with your daughter too, a great, look, the system's flawed. The average doctor visit is like 10 or 15 minutes. It's insane. Doctors don't have the time to ask the question, how are you feeling? You know, how are you sleeping with a kid? How are you at school? How are your friends? Like, what's going on? Because all these things are interconnected.
So much so. So much so. Jason, I have loved our conversation. I know the Front Row Dad community will as well. I just want to honor you and Colleen for the incredible company you've built. I want to honor you for the way that you are so present and active in your daughter's lives as you're running a company and you're still active. I mean, 10,000 steps a day, it's easy to not get that. It's intentional to do that. And if I recall, you are a flight of stairs at least once a week, what, 15, 20 flights of stairs?
Yeah, I am big on the micro. Like, I don't have an attention span or the time to just dedicate an hour to the gym. I am all about incorporating movement into my day. Like, I don't really go for an hour walk, but like, I'm always trying to walk. Less than five flights of stairs, I take the stairs, sometimes 10. If I'm going to go to the gym, I don't rest between sets. I just go. I do drop sets. I rotate. Like, I'm just not sitting around. I crank everything out. I don't have time. I'm always trying to be moving. So it's 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. I kind of piece it together, but collectively I do a lot.
And that's a great lesson for all of us. I mean, we're all busy people, but if we can find those 5-10 minutes at a time, go take them and go do the right thing.
Yeah, take a phone call outside. Take a Zoom outside if you can. Just walk.
Yeah. You know, phone calls still work. I love Zoom for interactions like this, but all of my one-to-ones are on phone calls because most of the time I'm trying to walk while I'm having those one-to-ones. It makes for better conversations.
You're waiting for an elevator? Take the stairs.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jason, I'll give you the last word and then we'll sign off.
You know, so incredibly grateful to be here. I'll just emphasize it's a journey. I'm still learning, but I think more than half the battle is being aware that it is a journey. It's a process and you're putting in the reps, you're putting in the effort. And if you're doing that, you're going to be okay. And something I've had to tell myself is, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. We're doing the work. It's the people who aren't aware and don't think they need to do the work and aren't questioning themselves. That's where usually the problems are. But I think this community is, and I'm trying to, and again, it's such an honor to know you and call you a friend and really value our relationship and everything you do. And just so happy to share my story with you guys. So thank you.
Appreciate you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Gentlemen, thanks for listening to the show today. Two actions to take from here. First, implement one thing that you learned from the interview. And number two, share this episode with somebody who values being a family man with a business. If you're enjoying the Front Row Dad podcast, the biggest thanks we ever get are honest reviews. So thank you for your feedback in advance. We read all of them. And if you want to learn more about the Brotherhood, which is our private community of 200 men from 6 different countries, visit frontrowdads.com for more info. If you're wondering what the hell the Brotherhood is all about, I'll leave you with some real feedback from guys who are active members and why they are part of our crew. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
You had this passion for wanting to find a way to make you a better parent and a better husband, just better in general. And so you developed this community of like-minded men that aspire to be better and aspire to put family first and business second. And so to me, there's no greater place I'd rather be. You know, people ask me all the time, like, if I could only pick one group, mastermind, organization, whatever to be part of besides my own, it's always yours. And that's it. And by the way, part of that has to do with you and the leader you are and the way that you treat people and how you show up. and the level of preparation that you have and the quality and amount of value that you offer. And then part of it's in the community that's been assembled and these unbelievable like-minded men that show up willing and ready to serve and to give and to share. And so to me, there's no better place that I can be spending my time. I look at two different things that we can be doing with our time. One of them is growing relationships and starting first with the most important relationships. And the other one is growing our financial acumen and our wealth to be able to do the things that we want to do and have impact and be able to spend time with the people that we value most by buying that time back. So to me, what you do and what I do is a great marriage of what I think is most important. And I would also throw in there that health is, you know, the other component of that. And I feel like the community that you've built, that each of us have built, is also centered around that. Because you talk about being a great husband, parent, that's going to come from taking care of yourself and making sure that you have the energy to be able to serve. And I do the same thing on a wealth standpoint, because wealth to me is not just about money. It's actually about having the time and the space to have your personal health. I would take having great health over no money any day of the week rather than the inverse of that, having a lot of money but no health. So to me, those are like the three most important components. And to me, we're always merging those three in the things that we each do. And so I think that's why there's a lot of crossover of, you know, members. That's why what you do resonates so much with me. What I do resonates so much with you. I joined as a lifetime member for that small little window where you offered it. I'm like, I'm in, because I know if I'm going to commit my time anywhere, this is it, because it makes me a better man. Makes me a better husband, makes me a better father. It encourages me to really step up my peer group with other like-minded men so that I can be on mission, on point with other people that will hold me accountable at the highest level.
John and I met a year and a half ago with the launch of my first book. And as we were going through the interview, I began to ask him questions about the brotherhood. And it resonated within me that a community of like-minded, like-hearted men that wanted to win, as he was just saying, at business and in life. And I'd reverse that. I want to win as a dad, and then I'd also love to be successful in business, because I feel like if I don't get the dad right, who cares what I did in business? That's my legacy. That's what lives beyond me. So to tribe up with a bunch of dudes going in the same direction with the pillars that are in place and the way that not only are you encouraged, compelled, you're chided, you're, you know, laughed with, but you get to pace yourself, but you can get around a band of dudes that you can trust, you can share with, you can grow with. And just recently completed a time with these guys. We did this fast at the start of the new year. Every day I would tune in to the little app where we were sharing comments. And I was so impressed how you could see guys that were further down the road and things like this, guys that were just starting, and the camaraderie, the encouragement. So for myself, this was a total fit. And I would encourage any dude that's looking for a place where you can feel connected with a band of guys wanting to go in the same direction, Front Row Dad's for you.